Hi, folks. This is Bob Main, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Welcome to episode number 69 of a very practical handgun firearms podcast. I'm just a private citizen. I'm not a combat trainer or ex-law enforcement or ex-military or anything like that, or a gunsmith. So I'm not going to tell you how to trick out AR-15s and make 1911s shoot inch and a half groups and stuff like that, because I don't know that stuff. But I'm just going to talk about the practical owning, carrying, and shooting of handguns, and you're going to get just a common sense perspective. And today, in segment one, I'm going to talk about surplus guns. You know, I realized that I really had not done any podcasts at all. I think I may have made mention in one of my podcasts about surplus rifles and surplus handguns. And, you know, they're affordable guns. Some of them are good values. Some of them are not. So I'm going to share with you some of my thoughts on that. I've got quite a bit of experience, because that's kind of pretty much how I got started messing around with firearms, was getting surplus guns. So we'll talk about that in segment number one. So before getting into all that, I just want to knock out a few announcements. Once again, background noise, because it's early on a Saturday morning. So this is going to be a two-part podcast. I'm going to record some of it now, and I'll probably record more of it Monday or Tuesday and post it up there on Tuesday. But it's Saturday, July 10th, and I'm actually headed out to a business event. I normally don't work on Saturdays, but yeah, every once in a while the job calls for it. You do what you got to do to make money, right? But I'm going to use this windshield time to talk about surplus guns. Also, by the time you hear this, we'll be very close to the Freedom Raffle. I'll do another podcast to pretty much kick off the Freedom Raffle. It'll probably be a short show just talking to you about what it is and what's going to happen and how it's all going to go down. If you have not already joined the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum, get on there. A good group of people. There's a lot of other podcasts. Check out all the podcasts at gunrightsradio.com. And also, my YouTube channel at Handgun World Show. And folks, guess what? I have also set up a Facebook page. I'm still trying to figure Facebook out. I'm not quite sure. If some of you can give me some pointers on how to make that thing work real well. I set up a personal page, and it's called Handgun World Show, and there's some posts up there and so forth. I know some of you have interacted with me on my my other personal Facebook page under the name of Bob Main. Go to the Handgun World Show, because I'm going to probably approve a limited amount of friends there, but I just want to use it to get the word out easily. And, of course, for you iTunes users, get on iTunes and rate the show, if you don't mind. It's a 5-star show so far. I'm going to try the best I can to keep it that way, so thank you for your compliments. Good, bad, or indifferent? That's okay. I can handle the constructive criticism as well. All right, that concludes the announcements. I don't like to ramble on too much about that and make this too commercial. So let's talk about surplus guns. It's how I got my start. I didn't have a whole lot of money when I was starting in firearms. And a friend of mine, real good friend of mine, he knows who he is, he listens to the show, he turned me on to some surplus guns. And, you know, the first gun that I bought was a military surplus rifle. It was a Mosin Nagant, or Musin Nagant. I'm not quite sure exactly how that's pronounced. But it's an old Russian military rifle. By the way, yeah, I just heard some noise here in the background. It's the lady on my GPS talking to me, telling me where to go. I don't know what it is, but ladies have a way of telling me where to go. All right, anyway, the very first rifle that I ever purchased was a Mosin Nagant M38, which is the real short version of their standard military issue. I think this was a long time ago, 20s, 30s, 40s, something like that, when they were issuing these to the Russian soldiers. But it shot the 7.62 by 54R round, which I'm going to cover a little bit later in segment one. Very, very powerful round. And it was quite an accurate rifle. Again, another one of those I really wish I would not have sold. Is it a self-defense battle rifle? Well, back in the day it was. Today, of course, they're superior products, but if you just want like a good utility hunting rifle, you know, check into the Mosin Nagants. If you find one in good condition, some of them are in crappy condition. And I actually found one in really, really good condition. Go to gun shows. You'll see them there all the time. Just make sure you use a bore light. Inspect the bore. Make sure it's good and shiny. No pitting in there. And make sure that the rifle in is overall good condition. So let me start with that. I'm going to talk about some surplus pistols. But they're affordable. They're affordable. I mean, sometimes for as little as $180, you can get a good pistol. Now, I know that there's some controversy out there. I know that some people say, Bob, you know, people need to buy the highest quality gun that they can buy because their life depends on it. And I've even said that. Well, you know I like to carry Glocks. And I would say from a quality standpoint, if I want to talk about overall build quality, there's better guns I could buy than a Glock. All right? I mean, if I want overall build quality, I could buy a Wilson Combat 1911. I could buy a Les Bear, I could buy an Ed Brown, whatever. I could buy one of those premium build quality guns. But for me, it's just not something that I like to shoot. All right? It's, you know, and I've explained many of the reasons why I don't use 1911s. Not that they aren't any good. Again, let me state this because I get emails every once in a while from 1911 folks that think I'm trying to bash 1911s. No, I'm not trying to beat up on 1911s. If they work for you and you have a good one, that's fantastic. I would not want to be on the receiving end of a 1911. So back to the military surplus, because I kind of got off on a little tangent there. The build quality on some of these is real good. And the build quality on some of them, not so good. And I'm going to talk about that. So back to the Mosin Nagant. Boy, these things are tough. They're tough and they're rugged. They're fairly accurate. The M38 was the short version. They have a 9130, which is the long version. They even have sniper versions. And from what I understand, if you know what you're doing, you can free float the barrel and things like that. And you can make these things highly accurate. I think there's Swedish Mosin Nagants that can be made highly, highly accurate. And a lot of target shooters that go out and do bullseye target shooting with rifles, a lot of them use these old Nagants. I've seen some people take these old Mosin Nagants and they've sporterized them. And they've put Monte Carlo stocks on them. And you know, they look like a deer hunting rifle. And you know, a 7.62 by 54R, the R means rimmed, by the way. It's a powerful cartridge. It's pretty much the Russian equivalent of the 30-06. So they'll do some damage. And as I mentioned, if you go back to the podcast that I did on rifles and shotguns, if it's all you can afford, it's all you can afford. You know, sometimes you can get a good Mosin Nagant for like around $150, $160 in really, really good condition at a gun show. And if it's all you can afford at first, it's better than nothing. It's a good gun. You can scope those things. You can change out the bolt. You know, the bolt, these things come standard without a turned-down bolt. All right, so if you're going to put a scope on it, you're going to want to have a turned-down bolt. But you can change those out. There's all kinds of different aftermarket parts for it. You can go to surplusrifle.com, and you can really kind of fix up a Mosin Nagant real good. And guess what? I was checking out AIM Surplus the other day. And AIM Surplus has plenty of military surplus ammo. They have a lot of 7.62 by 54R in stock. They have a whole bunch of 9 by 18 in stock. They've even got 8mm for you 8mm Mausers out there. My dad, when he was in Germany in the Army, he brought back an 8mm Mauser from Germany. My mom won't let me have it. She knows that it's a good rifle. And I'd like to have it as a memory of my father, but I'm working on that anyway. But they've got plenty of good 8mm ammo available too. And again, let's talk about the 8mm Mauser. I mean, it speaks for itself. I'm sure most of you have probably heard it. And if not, get on the internet and search 8mm Mauser. That's probably the second most powerful military surplus caliber available. 7.62 by 54R. Again, it's ballistically pretty much the same as a 30-06. Now, I'm not a ballistics expert. I've talked about it many, many times. So, you know, don't beat up on me too hard if I don't have that exactly correct. But I'm fairly sure that the ballistics and the power of it are pretty close to a 30-06, which in North America, it'll get the job done, especially if you're hunting. Okay, the other good thing about the military surplus ammo is it's low cost. 7.62 by 54R is relatively low cost. And then, of course, you got the 7.62 by 39. And I think we all know that caliber because the most popular rifle that shoots that is the AK-47 and the SKS. And AKs and SKSs are also considered military surplus. SKSs, I guess, are considered curio and relics. And, of course, we all know those are good buys, too. One of my favorite websites for the military surplus guns, and if you're a collector, a lot of folks like to just buy military surplus just for collectors, just to preserve pieces of history. And, you know, I've learned that sometimes people are just always on the search for old 1911s, the really old ones that were issued to the soldiers. Those things are great collectibles. And some of these military surplus firearms are great collectibles, and some of them are actually starting to dry up right now, too. So if you're into this kind of stuff, if you're into collectibles and you're into history, start getting some of these. Even if you're not going to shoot them, just get them and collect them because they're drying up. There's going to be a limited supply of those. And, in fact, I'm going to talk about one in particular that I really wish I would have bought about 6 years ago. And if you can get your hands on an East German Makarov pistol, the East Germans made some really good Makarovs. The Makarovs were the police pistols, and I'm pretty sure they were the standard issue sidearm for the East German military at one point. And the East German Makarovs are the highest quality of all. There's a couple of them I saw on Gunbroker listed. And boy, it's awful tempting just to buy one of those, but I hate not being able to see it because you got to get one that's in really good condition. And it's a 9mm gun. It shoots the 9x18 round. And I'll talk about some of the differences in a minute between the 9x18 and 9x19. They are not the same. But Southern Ohio Gun, that's www.southernohiogun.com. One of the things I thought was pretty interesting, if you go to their website right now, you'll see on their website they've got a Polish P64. Which some people think it's a Makarov. I'm not really quite sure if it really is technically a Makarov or not. Shoots the Makarov caliber 9x18. It's $169. Now, you know, I know a little bit about this pistol. And, you know, I don't like to talk about pistols that I don't know much about. But this one I happen to know about. And I've actually had a chance to shoot a P64. Not a bad little gun. They're kind of rough. And the trigger pull is real long and it's real hard and it's a long, stiff, double action pull. If you take it to a gunsmith, they can do a pretty good trigger job and soften that up a little bit for you. It is double action on the first shot and then single action after that. And that's one of the things that I don't like that style of gun, but you might. You know, if you're used to shooting SIGs or Berettas, and it's a good compact little gun. It's got a manual safety, and of course, it's a hammer fired gun, so you can always take a look at it. And you can see what condition that the pistol is in, which is a good feature. Not bad, you know. I mean, gosh, for $169, supposedly that the Makarovs, especially the Bulgarian and the East German Makarovs, are actually quite accurate. And if you do a little bit of accurizing work, like trigger jobs and things like that, I like these pistols because they're blowback design. And the blowback design actually has proven to be quite reliable. Now, blowback design, you know, hey, my limited gunsmith knowledge is going to come out here, so forgive me. But basically, the recoil spring is right over the barrel, so it uses the blowback of the slide to chamber another round. And as recoil takes place and the slide goes back, it uses that to chamber another round. Sort of. Anyway, like I said, my gunsmithing ignorance is coming out here. They're not bad guns. I mean, for the price. You know, if you're on a budget, if times are tough, but you need to have a pistol, you might want to think about something chambered in 9x18 that you can get on the military surplus market. If you know somebody else who's into military surplus guns and you can take them with you, that would be a good idea. If you want to call me, I can give you some information on it and kind of give you some of the info that I know if you're looking at one. But you know, just make sure you look at the overall condition. Some of these little Makarov-style pistols, you can actually get in some pretty good shape. Now, on Gunbroker, there's an East German Makarov on there. They want about $420 for it. And, you know, to me, that's not worth it, because if I'm going to spend $420, I'll just spend an extra $60, and I'll get myself a Glock. But years ago, the East German Makarovs could be had for a lot less money, and they're super high quality. All steel guns, too, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, now, since I'm on the subject of Makarovs, I do have a little bit of technical stuff to cover with you. For some of you who don't know what they are, the Pistolet Makarova, or Makarov, it's an automatic, a semi-automatic, of course, and it was designed in the 1950s by a Russian named Nikolai Makarov. And the gun was accepted by the Russian armed forces in 1951, and it was their standard sidearm. Now, they're also supposed to be extremely reliable, and one of the reasons is they don't have a lot of moving parts. Like a Glock, for example. I think a Glock's got 33 or 34 parts. The Makarov has 27 parts. So it's actually got fewer parts, moving parts, than the Glock. And that's one of the keys to the Glock reliability. And everybody that I've ever talked to that's owned a Makarov says that it's very, very reliable and very, very accurate little gun. The 9x18, you can get some pretty hot loads. And as a matter of fact, if you go to Academy Sports and Outdoors, where I live, it's sporting goods shop here in North Texas, they've got 9x18 on the shelf. And from what I understand, these little Makarov-style guns pretty much feed almost anything in that caliber. It's not the same as a regular 9mm Luger. All right, it's not 9x19. Don't try to stick a 9x19 round in there. And conversely, don't put a 9x18 round in your Glocks and SIGs and XDs and M&P 9mm. That won't work either. So be careful with your ammo selection. Now, let's get back to rifles for just a minute. I know I'm kind of bouncing around back and forth between handguns and rifles, but I want to cover surplus guns in general. Okay, the source of most of the surplus guns on the market are from governments that originally bought them, obviously, to equip their military. And rifles are primarily what they bought. And, of course, then they find their way into the American market when the military is finished using them. So Russia pretty much is the country with the largest cache of old guns. And they don't mind selling them to the people like us that were supposed to be on the other end of the barrel. But that's good news for us, because you can get some really good deals out there. In fact, some of the Russian M44s. Now, the M44s are very similar to the M38, but it's got a bayonet on it. And again, it's a real short, lightweight, handy little carbine shooting that big 7.62 by 54R around. I've seen some of those for like $120, $130 at gun shows in pretty good condition. Okay, and I love the 8mm Mausers that typically come from Germany. Those things are great, too. I just love that. My dad let me shoot that gun, and I shot it a couple of times when I was a young teen. I got to shoot it a few more times after he passed away, and like I said, Mom won't let me have that. But one of these days, I think I'm going to get my hands on that gun and buy a whole bunch of 8mm ammo and just go out to the range and have a hell of a lot of fun. Because that thing just, it feels power when you shoot it. Same with the Nagants, man. I tell you what, you want to get some attention at the range, you want to have some fun. I mean, they're a great range toy. If you want to have some fun, sit next to somebody that's shooting an AR-15 and pull out a Mosin Nagant and start wailing away. I mean, the vibrations from the muzzle blast will throw the guy's AR-15 off of his aim. You'll turn some heads at the range. They're loud and they're fun. They give off a big blast, a big huge muzzle blast, and it's just a lot of good range fun. And if nothing else, get one of these inexpensive surplus rifles, get a whole bunch of ammo for it, and just go out there and practice your marksmanship with a rifle and just have a heck of a good time at the range. Yeah, they recoil pretty hard. Put a recoil pad on the back of these Nagants and 8mm Mausers. I would strongly suggest that. I did that with the one that I had, and that made a huge difference. So you might want to think about that. There's also a CZ-82 out there, which that's not a bad pistol either. AIM Surplus. If you go to AIM Surplus, they have a pretty cool-looking CZ-82 that also shoots the 9x18 round. Now, CZ's a good manufacturer. CZ-52s are actually some pretty cool surplus. Those are good collectible guns, but man, I tell you what, they're hand cannons. If you can find a decent quality CZ-52, you can probably pick one of those up for about $150 or $160. Virgil Tripp used to hard chrome those. I don't know if he's doing that anymore. Every once in a while, Classic Arms will sell some hard chromed CZ-52s, which those would be just kind of cool. That'd be something to put in a case and put on the wall and talk about. They shoot the 7.62x25, which is a really, really high velocity, powerful round coming out of a handgun. Supposedly, they either are or used to be armor piercing. I'm not quite sure about that, but I tell you what, I got a friend of mine that has a CZ-52, and we have just had so much fun. He carries it. He carries it. You'll do some damage with that. You can find some people that are reloading that ammo and making some pretty good hollow point stuff with that for that ammo, too, for that gun. Okay, sorry if I seemed a little distracted there. I'm watching my GPS as I'm also dictating this podcast. I'm not quite sure where I'm supposed to be going this morning, but I'm trusting old Sally here on the GPS to set me straight and get me on the right course. But getting back to this CZ-82, the price on that's $219. You know, then you're going to have to pay FFL fees and you're going to have to pay shipping, but still. I mean, now, a couple things I don't like about these. First of all, you know, I don't like any gun with a manual safety, but if you don't mind that, that's okay. I also don't like the way that the magazine release button is. It's down there at the bottom of the grip, you know, the European style. I don't even know what they call that. But, you know, you've got to reach down there near the bottom of the magazine and hit the lever to eject it. To me, I don't like that. I like to have the magazine release button right there where my strong hand thumb is. But if you like carrying cocked and locked, you can do that with this inexpensive CZ-82. It's a heavy gun, 1.76 pounds, but it comes with two 12-round magazines and shooting a 9x18. So, something to think about. At least it's something to collect if you're into collecting firearms. I'm not really into collecting guns, but some of these old historic military surplus are real appealing to gun collectors. Okay, now I want to finish up segment number one by talking about one more military surplus gun, and that is the good old SKS. I've shot SKSs and I've shot AK-47s. I own an AK. I have an AK, and it's the Sega variety. It's not a military surplus. Well, maybe you could call that military surplus. And I've shot plenty of SKSs. I've even shot the small paratrooper SKSs, which really were never ever issued to paratroopers. They called it that so they could sell it to the Americans in the American market. But they are a very, very short, handy, short-barreled, handy version of the SKS. Hard to beat these guns. You can still get decent quality SKSs in very, very good shape, sometimes even in pristine condition for less than $300 if you shop around. Good, affordable utility rifles. I think they're one of the best utility rifles. And what do I mean by that? To me, a utility rifle is something I can use for just about anything. I can hunt with it. I can shoot self-defense with it if I have to. And it's just a good all-around, all-purpose rifle. In my opinion, the only limit that the SKS has is capacity. You know, I mean, the AK, sure, you can stick a 30-round magazine in that. Now, you know me. I've always kind of come from the position, when are you ever going to need to fire 30 rounds of 7.62x39? I think it's highly unlikely. We're not going to war, folks. We're talking about civilian defense. If you're going to war, well, then that's different. Yeah, then several 30-round magazines for your AK or for your AR is definitely a must. But, you know, for ordinary civilian defense, and I've seen people who practice, they can reload SKSs pretty quick. If you get some good stripper clips and keep your ammo on the stripper clips and you practice, go out to the range and practice reloading, you can stick another 10 rounds real quickly into SKSs. I guess they are considered somewhat military surplus because they used to be a military issue years back. Hard to beat them. I think they're more accurate than the AK. I do. Sorry to you AK fans. And of course, I own an AK, so I am an AK fan. But when it comes to pure accuracy, I would much rather have an SKS. They're built for better accuracy than the AKs, shooting the same exact round. And that intermediate caliber round, that 7.62 by 39, you know, you can do a lot of damage with that. Some say the ballistics are superior to the 223s. I'm not going to touch that argument, but you can't go wrong with them. So in my opinion, everybody needs to have a good SKS and a good, you know, utility Mosin-Nagant rifle. You just never know when these things might come in handy. You never know if you could be end up in a survival situation where you got to do some hunting. And you know, if you can't afford to go out and plunk down the money for a really fine 308 or a really fine 30-06 for hunting, consider the military surplus Nagants. They could serve you very well. And if you don't have $1,000 to get yourself a fine AR-15, or don't want to drop, you know, $700 to get yourself a high quality AK, consider the good SKSs. They'll serve you well too. I think you'll be well defended with one of those. And you can even go out and hunt with an SKS. Shot placement's what it's all about, folks. And I know plenty of people that have taken a lot of deer with SKSs. All right, so with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up segment number one. My GPS is yakking at me saying that I'm going to be at my destination shortly. I'll be back in about 30 seconds here with segment number two. Thanks. Okay, let's get started with segment number two. I'm at my destination here. I'm getting ready to go into this business event, but I got about 25 minutes or so to kill. So the good news is you shouldn't hear any more background noise or GPS talking. All right, I want to completely shift gears now. I'm going to move to a totally different subject. I hope you got something out of the surplus handguns and rifles in segment one. If there's more to add, send me an email at bob@handgunworld.com or jump on the forums at the Gun Rights Radio Network or just put a comment on the main page at handgunworld.com and let me know. Let me know what I forgot. Give me some experiences if you have some personal experiences with surplus rifles and handguns. I would love to hear it. But I want to talk about a holster. And I want to do a little review here because I've had a chance now to use a particular holster for a couple of weeks, and I got to say some great things about it. I have, as most of you know, when I was at the Texas IDPA match, I bought a CompTac MTAC neutral cant holster, and I also bought a CompTac Gladiator outside the waistband holster. I didn't care for the Gladiator too much. I know some of you like them. I know there's some people on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum that have had good experience. For me, it just wasn't a really good fit. If I'm going to carry OWB outside the waist, I'll probably end up buying a Raven. However, the MTAC, I love to appendix carry. And so I originally bought the neutral cant, and I got to tell you, it is a sweet holster. Now I do see what all the fuss is about. Let me start with this. It is so comfortable, the combination of the Kydex and the leather. You know, I think Crossbreed started this stuff, and then CompTac jumped in with their Minotaur versions. Whatever, both of them are good. I'm not going to get into the debate between Crossbreed and CompTac. That's a useless debate. It's the style of the holster I like. I love it first because it's a thin profile. Very, very thin. And that makes it very, very easy to conceal. Right now, as I'm doing this podcast, I'm just in a polo shirt and some dress pants. And I wore this all day yesterday, too. At work. Nobody had a clue. I had my Glock 19 in this holster all day yesterday. Nobody had a clue. Nothing prints. Now, what I did is I carried this appendix style for a while, for about 4 days. A little too bulky for me. The beautiful thing about the CompTac MTACs is that you can adjust the cant just by adjusting the height of the two clips. So, I maxed that thing out. I actually got it to about a 15-degree cant, and I started putting that back at the 330 position. I know. Bob Main, Mr. Appendix Carry, I started carrying behind the strong side hip at about 330. Wow, I love it. This might be the holster that convinces me, or at least makes me, go to 330 carry in the 330 position. I don't know. I'm still sold on Appendix. I still love my Dale Fricke Archangel holster, fine holster. It's good to have choices, folks. I highly recommend. Now, folks, you know what? MTAC is not a paid sponsor. CompTAC is going to be part of my Freedom Raffle. I'll let you know a little secret. I got a couple holsters from CompTAC to give away, and I'll talk more about that when I start the Freedom Raffle. But they don't pay to sponsor this show. I'm just telling you this because I'm a user of their products, and I totally like it. The thin profile, it's a fast draw because half of it's Kydex. It doesn't wear on the finish of the gun. I've practiced drawing in and out of this thing a couple hundred times already with an unloaded gun, and it's just been great. It's so comfortable all day. I wore it, last Thursday I wore it for like 12 hours, and no discomfort whatsoever. So it's a fine holster, and if you don't like them, they've got an excellent 30-day money back, no BS guarantee, and they really mean it. So what I did is I sent my Gladiator back to him, and I exchanged it for a regular MTAC. So now I will have both versions. I'm going to have the Appendix Carry version, and I'm going to have the Strong Side Hip Carry version. So I'm excited about that. The other benefit of CompTAC that I really like, not a lot of holster makers give you this option. If you switch guns, all you have to do is just change out the Kydex body. You just order a Kydex body for your new gun, place it back on the same leather backing, use the same clips and everything. You don't have to go buy a new holster for a new gun. Not a lot of holster manufacturers give you that ability. I think that's a huge strength, because some of you are going to get in, if you're not already, you're going to get into owning multiple handguns, and you're going to get into carrying multiple handguns for different purposes. What I will probably end up doing is I will probably end up buying a couple of extra holster bodies, probably one of them for my 9mm 1911. And carry that in probably the Appendix Carry version, because it's a little 4-inch Kimber 1911. I'll probably Appendix Carry that and Strong Side Hip Carry my Glock 19. That's kind of where I'm thinking of going. So all I have to do is spend about $35, $36, I think. That's about it for the new body, the new Kydex body, and put it on the MTAC holster on the neutral cant, and away I go. So I think that's a huge, huge plus. And if some of you decide, hey, I want to carry a different gun, it makes it real easy to do that switch out. So big praises to CompTAC. I would not say this if I wasn't an actual user of it and had some good experience with them. And I wouldn't recommend to you if I didn't think that they were top-notch. I also wouldn't put them on the upcoming raffle if I didn't think that they were top-notch and well worth it. Okay, I'm free to pretty much say whatever I want on this show, and so I'll tell it like it is, how I feel about it. So thumbs up for the CompTAC MTAC. Okay, I want to shift gears one more time back to surplus guns, because there's a few things I realized I did not say in segment number one, and then I'm going to wrap up the show. It is going to be kind of a short show considering my normal time frame. Something else I want to mention about that CZ 82 pistol that I was talking about earlier. It has polygonal rifling in the barrel, which is the same kind of rifling that Glock uses. With polygonal, I can't even say that. That's a tough word. With polygonal rifling, I think that's how they pronounce it, you do get better velocity, and that's another reasons why I carry Glocks, is because of the type of rifling that they use. The disadvantage is you can't shoot lead through them, which is why you see a lot of people that will buy aftermarket stainless steel barrels for their Glocks, so they can shoot lead bullet reloads. But just for carrying typical jacketed hollow point ammo, I like that polygonal rifling, and that's a plus. Another thing about Makarovs that I forgot to mention, their overall simplicity is one of the geniuses of the design of the Makarov. You can disassemble these things with, you know, without any tools. Just, I mean, almost like a Glock. I mean, a Glock, all you have to do is pretty much have a Glock punch to disassemble that thing. Very similar with disassembling the Makarov. I've taken a Makarov apart, and it is ridiculously easy. And also, they use the multi-functioning parts concept, sort of like Glock does. You know, for example, the hammer spring in a Makarov also serves as the magazine release, and the safety also holds the firing pin in place, and the slide release is also the ejector, and the trigger guard on a Makarov doubles as the field stripping slide release. So they have a lot of parts in their guns that function two purposes, and that's one of the ways that they maximize reliability and maximize simplicity, which is what you want in a carry gun. So you may want to think about that. Also, I realized I think I made a little mistake in segment number one when I was talking about the Mosin Nagants. It's the Finnish, the ones made in Finland, I think, that are the most accurate. And I think that's the ones that a lot of target and bullseye shooters use, and they accurize those. And I know one guy up in Oklahoma used to free float the barrel, and he used to do some accurizing work. And this guy was really, really good with an old Nagant made like in about 1937. Sometimes those older guns are better constructed than today's newer guns. And, you know, it's, I hate to say that, but it's true. So you might want to check some of those out. Okay, that is it, folks. Short show, but thanks for tuning in to episode number 69. Hope you got some information on surplus guns. You really can't go wrong with some of those. Check them out. Like I said, even for collectible value. I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.